Are you ready, Alabama?
Hello? Who's there? What's going on?
It's time to enter the doghouse.
Whatever's happening here, just knock it off.
Call the big dog now at 866-485-9867.
These kids are weird, man. They're weird.
Live from the Big Dog Production Studios.
How you doing?
It's the Tom Abraham Show.
That might be listed in Revelations as the cause for the apocalypse.
Here he is, the head of the household, the Big Dog.
You're the smartest guy I've ever met.
Tom Abraham.
You want me to do this crap?
I guess I'm on here. Am I on? Can somebody respond?
Hey, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Throwback Thursday in the Doghouse. I am your host, Tom Abraham. You know, today would have been Waylon Jennings' 80th birthday. Dude died in 2002 at the way too young age of 64. He was the poster child for outlaw country music back in the day and a member of the Highwaymen with Willie Nelson, Johnny Cash, and Kris Kristofferson. Had real troubles in Nashville. It was back when Nashville was very stuffy and buttoned down about its country music. And so he went back to Texas, and he was kind of like outlaw country music, if you will. But anyway, Waylon Jennings, his 80th birthday today. So today we play Waylon Jennings music on your Throwback Thursday. It's also U.S. Open Thursday at Erin Hills in Wisconsin, and it's been crazy there. I mean, they're scoring like it's the Bob Hope Desert Classic with Ricky Fowler leading the way. Ricky shot a 7-under par 65, tying the lowest first round in history relative to par. Nicholson Weisskopf did it at Ballastraw in 19 and 80. Now, those were 63s because that was a par 70. This is a par 72 course. That was a par 70 course in 1980. So those guys shot 63, 7-under par. And this 7-under par is good for a 65, but it does tie the lowest round in U.S. Open history relative to par. I mean, realistically, that's the only thing that matters, right? Relative to par. By the way, Jack won that one at 8-under par. So don't think just because you're 7-under par after round one that you're going to shoot 30-under par. I mean, that's not stupid here. Believe me, they'll figure out a way to trick that thing up. They'll clean that up. They'll do something. But anyway, speaking of weird over there, a blimp caught fire and crashed at the U.S. Open. The pilot was the only one hurt. It was a one-man piloted blimp, some advertising blimp. No report on that guy other than, I mean, he's alive. I mean, they hauled him away on a stretcher or something, but it's just weird, man. It's just crazy. Now, with the wind coming up in the afternoon, these afternoon scores may be a bit higher, and we will keep you posted throughout. And there's a number of guys with Alabama ties in this deal as well. There's four Crimson Tide golfers in this thing, including Drew Love, Davis Love's son. And Davis Love is on his bag. How cool is that? His nickname is Drew. His name is, he's Davis Love the fourth. You know, Davis Love the third is his caddy. But Drew Love shot a 1-under par 71 today. Bud Cauley shot 73, another Alabama guy. Jason Duffner out of Auburn shot a 76. Yet to go out, Justin Thomas, he's going out right now. I think right now as we speak, he's hitting the course. Trey Mullinex is an Alabama guy. He's hitting. Are these my times? All times are local. Yeah, they're local with us. They're central time. But Ricky Fowler setting the pace in that deal. Now, Jordan Spieth is wrapping up his round. He is at 1-over par right now, and the defending champion, Dustin Johnson, is at 3-under par. Now, everybody got in yesterday on our U.S. Open FECTA, except for Wolverine Dan. Wolverine Dan got in 10 minutes ago. Wolverine Dan got in 2 minutes ago. I mean, what do I do with these picks? At the end of the first round? I don't know which is worse. Wolverine Dan giving me his picks now or him putting Jordan Spieth and Dustin Johnson in his group, where both guys are like Dustin Johnson might miss the cut, for God's sakes, and Jordan Spieth is one over, and he put McIlroy in there. I can't take those picks. I mean, look, not that he would win, but can I take those picks? I don't think I could take those picks. Yeesh. Anyway, Fowler leading, Brian Harman second, Tommy Fleetwood third, Brooks Koepka is also third. Well, actually, these guys are tied for second. Harman, Fleetwood, and Koepka are all tied for second. Patrick Reed with a 400 par 68 is in there with a good first round as well. J.B. Holmes had a 69. Lee Westwood shot 69. Ernie Els is 3 under. He's on the 18th hole as we speak. Brant Snedeker had a nice little 200 par 70. I mean, there's a lot of guys under par. I mean, there are 24 guys under par. That's a lot of dudes under par. So we'll keep you posted on how that thing works out. All right, we got a slam show today, and we're going to get started with Steve-O. He's got 5 shows at Stand Up Live Comedy Club beginning tonight at 7 o'clock. He's got 2 shows tomorrow and Saturday, plus a Sunday show. And you might want to go to huntsville.standuplive.com website. Get your tickets now. You might want to check that out. And if he wasn't in Huntsville, I'd think that maybe he was the one that was flying that blimp that crashed over there at the U.S. Open. Also coming up a little bit later on, former Cardinals pitcher turned outfielder Rick Ankiel will join us, talk about his book, The Phenomenon. We'll get into that. Josh Ward, SEC insider. Alan Carpenter on the Braves. Show slam today. Matt Scalise will be in. Chris Cotillo will be in. PGA Tour insider Stephen Gribben with his thoughts on the first round of the Open. That comes up at 5 o'clock. But joining us right now on the Woody Anderson Ford VIP hotline, Steve-O. Steve-O, welcome to the show. How are you, man?
I'm great, man. Thank you. How you doing?
I'm fantastic. Don't you know you guys are supposed to be, like, tragically hip and late on these interview things? You're not supposed to get on the line, like, 4 minutes early. What are you doing, man?
Oh, it's all good, dude. I was sleeping, and I just happened to wake up, and I was like, oh, let me knock it out before I try and sleep for another 8 minutes.
Well, I hear you. Now, listen, I got to tell you, I got sons that are 17 years old up to, I got 4 sons that are from 17 to 28 years old. And I got to tell you right now, man, I mean, I know, look, you've been building a great career here. But I can't begin to tell you how much crap you caused me over the last 10 or 12 years, because my sons think you are the coolest thing that ever happened, and I've got to constantly go out there and get them off the trampoline when they're trying to jump off the trampoline into the pool and into a garbage can and everything else. I don't know. You killed me, man. For 10, 15 years, I've had my boys trying to do everything that you do. It's very difficult.
Hey, I get it, man. I think that kind of rules, though. You know, as long as everyone's okay, it's pretty rad.
Yeah, no, yeah, they survived it. Let me ask you, as your career moves along here, and you've got this great stand-up deal going on now as well, the fact that you're so closely tied to the Jackass days, you know, is that cool for you? Is that something that you embrace, or is it something that you're trying to, okay, that was fine, now I'm trying to do a few other things here?
Oh, I so embrace it. Yeah, dude, I love it. And I feel like it helps me. Just because even though my reputation is not for stand-up comedy, I think that when people find out I'm doing a show, they just think, well, that guy's nuts. So, yeah. Like, let's check it out. And sure enough, you come see my show, and I'm nuts. And I'm reckless. I'm shameless. There's nothing I won't admit. I throw every celebrity right under the bus. I make it juicy as hell. And then I'm doing stunts and tricks on stage. And after the show, I got the free meet and greet. So every ticket's a backstage pass.
Nice.
You know, I don't know. I've been at it for 7 years now. I've been on the road doing comedy. I got my comedy special on Showtime. I'm getting ready to tape a new one. And it's all going real smooth. And at the same time, I'm still doing all the crazy stunts and mm-hmm. making all the videos. And so I don't know. I still do it all. And I just turned 43 years old, but I'm just not slowing down, and so it's great.
That was going to be my next question. You know, 43 is a big difference from 33. I saw you jumping off of that trampoline into the lake or whatever it was, off of the bridge. I saw that stunt at your website, and that was pretty cool. But, you know, at what point in time does the body start yakking at you, and you got to kind of tone down a little bit some of the physical stuff?
Right. I mean, I think I'm about in that area, but I'm pretty excited about just becoming like the Joan Rivers of nut shots. Yeah, I mean, as long as I can get away with it, I'm gonna keep trying. And you know, I don't know. Like, I'm still able to do it, so I don't even want to think about when I entirely stop doing physical stuff.
Yeah, Steve-O with us here talking about now he's got show coming up tonight in Huntsville at Stand Up Live Comedy Club, and then two shows tomorrow night, two shows Saturday, and a show on Sunday. Now, you say you're doing stuff with your act. You're doing stunts and so on with the act. I mean, are there props involved here? I mean, what can people expect when they go to a Steve-O show here?
Yeah, I do have props. I got my tour manager brings me stuff on stage. And of course, you know, like you said, I'm doing a bunch of shows. When you're in the comedy clubs, you repeat it a lot. But yeah, I do shocking physical tricks, man, right there in the club, and I do it every show, and I love it.
Yeah,
I really do.
Now,
I used
to be
a circus clown, so I'm kind of used to doing physical stuff, you know, with a lot of repetition.
I saw that, and I thought, oh, this is somebody screwing with me on the Wikipedia here. This isn't real. You went to the Barnum and Bailey Circus Clown School. Is that correct? You went from Miami,
yep,
which is like a circus clown school too, but you went from Miami, and then you ended up somehow at the Barnum and Bailey Circus Clown School?
That's exactly right, man. I dropped out of University of Miami, and I had no plan, you know, except I was going to try to become famous videotaping stunts with you know, home video camera. Everybody thought that it was just a tragic shame that I was such a loser, and I was determined to make it happen. And, you know, after being homeless for a few years and I found out about the Clown College, I thought, you know, if I could graduate from Ringling Brothers and Barnum and Bailey Clown College, then I'll be a trained circus professional. People would take me more seriously as a stuntman. And it all kind of worked out that way a little bit. And at that point, when I graduated from Clown College, I had a career as a clown for a while, and that, you know, paid my bills. I didn't have to sell drugs anymore.
No,
and ultimately, I kept at what I was trying to do, and I pulled it off. And since then, I've just done more and more stuff.
Now, does this stuff? We know that you've cleaned up in terms of, you know, the drugs and alcohol and all of that. You've been sober for a number of years now, which is great. You eat healthy. You're a vegan and all that stuff. But do you work out and stuff? Because these guys, to me, you're like a professional wrestler. I always say they're athletes. They're like stuntmen. You know, it's not a sport because it's rigged, but they're athletes because they're basically stuntmen, like a movie stuntman.
Of course.
Do you work out? I mean,
yeah,
do you, because you look in great shape.
You know, I'm an active guy, but I don't have any kind of a formal workout deal. Mm-hmm. I mean, I hike a lot. I got dogs. You know, I don't know. I don't go to a gym or anything like that.
Yeah, but you stay in shape. Big sports fan, is that right? Or am I just make that up?
I enjoy sports. I mean, I enjoy sports a lot. I love all the fights. I love the football. I love the basketball. Sometimes I'll go to a Dodger game.
Would you buy Mayweather-McGregor? I mean, will you buy that? Will you drop $80 on that thing just to see that sideshow? I mean, you might could go there and act, do your clown act over there, because I think that's going to be a circus.
Sure. You know, I've never bought a fight, but with that said, I will go over to, you know, to a friend who's throwing a party or something. I mean, I'll see
right.
it. There's no question I'll see it.
Yeah.
And I think it is, it's funny. It's funny just how much money they, they're going to make. And it's got to be better than Mayweather-Pacquiao.
I mean, but and a lot of that is Mayweather's style, and I'm more interested. To me, I'm more interested in Triple G and Canelo from a fight standpoint. But I think I'll end up having to buy this thing. All right. So if somebody says to Steve-O, all right, here's the next thing we want you to do. We want you to get in the ring with either Mayweather or McGregor, which of those two dudes would you feel more comfortable with, like, for your health, getting in? Which would be the bigger stunt, getting in with Mayweather or getting in with Conor McGregor?
I'm guessing that it would probably be a bigger stunt to do it with Mayweather, because with McGregor, he would choke me out. I would let him, and that wouldn't be a big deal. Like, on my first comedy special, I had a UFC fighter, Tim Kennedy, pick me up in the air by my neck, and he choked me out until I was unconscious. He dropped me from up there. My head bounced off the stage like a basketball.
No, that's not good.
One of the more ill-advised things I've ever done, and that wasn't too bad. Actually, getting hit in the face over and over and over until I'm done, that's probably more difficult than getting choked out.
Steve-O with us tonight at Stand Up Live Comedy Club. Two shows tomorrow, two shows Saturday, and a show on Sunday as well. But you do it. It sounds like to me, if somebody said, and they probably wouldn't even have to give you a real lot of money, you would do it, wouldn't you? You would get in a round or get in a ring with those guys, with either one of those guys, and just go ahead and take your shot, wouldn't you?
I mean, yeah, I would have to. At one point, years ago, I was locked up in a psychiatric ward with Mike Tyson, and I spent the whole time trying to talk him into filming a stunt with me. And my idea was to have him hold his fist out and keep it still and let me run into it with my face. And ultimately, I wound up doing it with him at the Charlie Sheen roast.
Yeah.
I dove face first into Mike Tyson's fist and completely broke my nose and got two black eyes.
Yeah.
And it was one of my prouder moments.
Well, hey, you know what I mean? I mean, that's something to put on a resume, right? I mean,
yeah.
that's one of them things. Now, you must get tons and tons of ideas from people, right? People say, hey, okay, listen, I got something for you. Why don't you do this? You know what I mean? Do they hit you with all kinds of suggestions?
Not as much as you might think. You know,
really?
Mostly what I get is just guys begging me to kick them in the nuts. And
did Arky do that this morning?
I try not to do that too much.
Yeah. I thought maybe Arky would do. Well, you don't want to kick Cole Kublik in the nuts. You know, he's kind of a big guy. But I was wondering, maybe Arky this morning when you were in studio with our morning show, you'd have to be kind of a sharpshooter. But I was wondering if Arky said, hey, come over here and kick me in the nuts.
Yeah, I wouldn't. I don't know. I try not to do that too much. And I like to, at this point, hold out for the more kind of creative idea.
Yeah. Okay. No more stapling your bag to your leg or anything like that, though, right? I mean, you do that once. You can't keep doing that.
I'll be doing that when I tape my next comedy special. I have a sort of a way to do that that's really funny. And I don't know. I mean, I have no problem with doing that. I'll do that. That's no big deal.
I'm trying to think of how it's not funny to staple your bag to your leg. I'm trying to think of what would be a way that's not funny stapling your bag to your leg. That's
well,
what I'm
the first time I ever did it, I stapled it to both of my legs. I called it the butterfly. And that was pretty hilarious.
Did you get arrested for doing that or something? You
didn't only get staple it one time and have it be even funnier. If you mash your junk all into itself, you pull your bag up over everything, you staple it to your stomach, you call that the turtle.
Yeah, I was thinking about doing that, but I decided not to. But you got yourself jammed up over that one time, didn't you? Didn't they come after you?
Oh, you bet they did, man. I was charged with a felony for that in Louisiana.
Louisiana. I mean, they're really worried about that. The stuff that goes on in Louisiana, you'd think they would have more things to worry about than some guy up on stage stapling his nuts to his leg. I mean, you know, they got a lot bigger issues than that in Louisiana.
Right. Well, it was in one of these parishes outside of New Orleans, and they really wanted to go after me. For whatever reason, I think it might have been political, but yeah, that put me on the map, kind of separate from Jackass. I was, that was a long, long time ago, and that was really one of the things that made me a more recognizable name, and I'll never stop being grateful for that.
All right, besides the comedy tour, tell us what you got coming up. You mentioned you got a comedy show with HBO or Showtime.
I'm working on a new comedy special with our Jackass director, so I'll be doing some big old marquee stunts for that. as well as the stand-up. I just finished writing a movie script, which I'm super psyched about. I'm ready to start shooting my own movie, anytime here in the near future. And other than that, there's a couple potential TV show ideas floating around, but until that happens, I'm not really believing in it too much. Yeah. And other than that, I roam around and do my comedy tour, and I just maintain a really kind of a big presence on all the YouTube and the Facebook and all that. Which is great, man. It was tough for me to go from making Jackass movies to uploading YouTube videos. Like, that was kind of a tough pill to swallow. But the reality is, the way that the world is now, I'm so glad I swallowed that pill, because I've got upwards of 19 million people following me on all these various platforms, and that in and of itself is really a viable thing to keep me going. So I'm glad that I do that as well.
All right, man. Well, keep up the good work. Just listen, don't kill yourself, all right? Because that's like a one-trick pony.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's only good once. You can only get a little bit out of it, and then that's it, and then it's no good anymore. So just don't kill yourself
fun. I get it. I've survived enough at this point that I'm pretty careful about the battles I pick. I mean, I'm still a maniac, and I'll prove that at Stand Up Live all weekend. I'll go ahead and be a little careful to stick around. I appreciate you, man. Thank you.
All right, man. Appreciate it. Thank you. All right. There you go, Steve-O. Go see him.
What?
Holy mackerels. Really good. There you go. All right. Let me get this out of the way so that I can get him in, because I know he's got thought that he wants to jump in on this deal. That dude right there behind the curtain, playing the stacks and wax, the players that matter, answering the phones, pushing the buttons, keeping us out of the air. Part Italian, part Mexican, part mutt. Part in awe, his family calls him Antonio McBest. To us, he's simply McStaple My Nuts.
Chico, don't be discouraged. The man, he ain't so hard to understand.
Kiss my brown ass.
Do you know who I am?
Who in the blue hell are you?
I'm the producer of this show. If I didn't step up, you're nowhere. I put this thing together out of spit and polish.
He has an intern.
You don't ever say that to me. Bullcrap.
All those of you that know Italians and like Italians, this is your day.
I don't care how many Dago, Guinea, Wok, Greaseball, Goombas come out of the woodwork.
I don't know how to say this, so I'm going to choose my words very carefully. I think you're a psycho.
Hey, Tom. Hey, Tom.
Oh, hey, Tom. Oh, hey, Tom. Hey, Tom! Hey, Tom! Hey, Tom!
Tom, can you get me off the hook? For old time's sake.
You ask a question every week that I don't know anything about.
We love you! We love you forever and ever!
Say hello to my little friend!
Okay. Have you stapled Cream's bag to his leg yet? Or what? Are you trying it?
No, look. Now, this is a cautionary tale. Just remember, everyone, that...
Yeah, don't try this at home.
If you're not careful, your turtle will cost you a felony. You know what I mean?
I'm just, who thinks of that? You know what I mean? And I really hate the guy, because he caused me so much aggravation with my sons, because especially my youngest son, who tries to do stupid crap like that. And finally, I mean, my youngest son has made some of the craziest videos and does some stupid stuff where he jumps into a garbage can and rides his bike off of it. He does dumb things. And he's finally, I think, outgrown that. But he's not 43. He's 17. You know what I mean?
Right.
But, this guy, I mean, how long can you keep doing that, right? I mean, how long can you keep abusing yourself before you kill yourself?
The craziest thing is, like you said, he's 43 and literally has zero shame about it. He was pretty proud of a lot of the things he's done and is continuing to do.
Oh. Yeah, and even though he did sound stoned, didn't he? But he was tired. He's been clean and sober since 2008. That's a long time.
Yeah,
that's like 7 years or something that he's been clean and sober. But I'm trying to think of, like, you're sitting around and you're like coming up with the next trick. Okay, wait a minute. Let me do this. I'm going to take my junk and I'm going to fold it down inside of my scrot, and I'm going to fold that up over the top, and then I'm going to staple both sides to both legs. I'm going to call that the butterfly turtle. Yeah, that's a good idea. Who the hell comes up with that?
Right. Oh, like I laugh, but I laugh out of pity because I feel bad for the guy.
Bad, man.
But
it's just wrong.
Oh my gosh. Like I was crazy. Stunned. I've seen a lot of the Jackass stuff. Never really had the urge to try any of that stuff, but I watched it because some of it was funny. But man, like I'm just still in shock and awe that like how proud of himself he is.
Oh, he's made a living out of that. He's made a living out of being an unbelievably ridiculous, like he said, loser who just mutilated himself to become famous. I mean, he's made a living out of it. What a country. All right, give me a little manouge here because we got Rick Angel coming up in a few minutes. So hit us up with a little bit of something that we didn't know because this is a slam show. We got so much to do.
Yeah,
I can't go without the manouge. Yeah, what are you going to
do? Well, we're going to start in 1928 when Ty Cobb stole home for the 50th and final time at the age of 41 years old. 1951, Joe Lewis.
I got nothing to say about that, okay, because I don't know about 1928 or whatever.
Joe Lewis in 1951 KO'd Lee Savold in 2 minutes and 29 seconds into the 6th round. That was his final KO. He finished with a record of 66-3 with 52 wow. knockouts.
Dang.
1980, Jack Nicklaus, like you mentioned, shot 272 at the U.S. Open. That was his last U.S. Open victory.
Yeah, he wins a PGA later that year.
Yep.
At Oak Hill Country Club, but go ahead.
And then in 2011, the Boston Bruins won their first title in 39 years.
Woo-hoo!
And their 6th overall, I believe.
I became a Bruins fan when they won in 72.
Yeah. And 39 years later, you get the...
Yeah. I got another one. I got a payoff.
1984, Tim Lincecum was born. The Freak is just 33 years old. I thought he was
really?
A little older than that. Yeah.
That's all?
Yeah.
Wow.
I was surprised.
Is he now? He's not pitching, is he?
I don't think so, but I'm not exactly sure where he was. I meant to look that up earlier, but I got sidetracked by staple nuts and all
yeah,
that.
Right.
I think he's in the. I think he's with the Angels, though.
Do you think he used like a certain kind of stapler for that, or what?
I don't know.
I mean, you think it's just like a regular stapler, or you think that you got like an extra sharp staples, or
I don't. Do you think like the staple company would like sponsor that? Like, yeah, our staples are so good that they can.
I wonder if he does a local anesthesia first. I wonder if he slips a little like before he goes out on stage, he gives himself a shot in the grind. I wonder if he does that.
I don't know. Maybe. Maybe. But that would be cheating, and we are all against cheating. And in 1972, one more birthday, 1972, Andy Pettitte was born. He is 45 today.
Wow, there you go. So a couple of pitcher birthdays today. Good day to be born if you're a pitcher. All right, let's get a break. And when we come back, Rick Ankiel will join us. What a story he has, and he's next. It's the Tom Abraham Show. Weird start, but we're off and running here on 730-1039.
Read the sign. Beware of dog. Tom Abraham is back.
Let's go to Lukenbach, Texas. Waylon and Willie and the boys. This successful life we're living got us few.
Welcome back on a Throwback Thursday. It's Waylon Jennings would be 80 years old today. So he's in the hot seat. We're featuring the Waylon Jennings movie. Kenny Trill just hit the text window, by the way. He's on the beach, I believe, in Alabama down at Orange Beach, listening to the show on the app. So that's good. I'm glad that he's down there taking advantage of the app and listening to the show there. And he can hear the great story of Rick Ankiel. This guy here, man, I remember when he came out as a pitcher, he was outstanding. It was so fun to watch. And then something happened, man. So something snapped in 2000 in the playoffs. And then the guy did something that we just have never seen. I mean, he went back and reinvented himself as an outfielder, and I was just such a fan of what this guy was doing watching it happen. And he hits a home run for St. Louis in his first game back up in the major leagues as an outfielder. It's just one of the great stories out there. And now he's written a book called The Phenomena, and he joins us now. Rick, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me on.
I appreciate you joining us. And, it's interesting, but when you hear the word the yips, which is in the title of your book, The Phenomenon, Pressure, the Yips, and a Pitch That Changed My Life. When you hear the term the yips, we're thinking about golf. It's the U.S. Open, and guys my age in the 50s, we start getting the yips, you can't make a putt, and so on. I never really thought of that as a baseball term, though.
Yeah, understood. There's a couple different names for it. You hear the yips, the thing, the monster, and that's what's so bizarre about it, that even in today's time, scientifically, we don't have a name for it, and that's just how weird and strange this thing is. You know, it's a bizarre thing. There's no question. I mean, even today we still don't know why it happens. We see, you know, what happens to guys who get it, but there's still no why of why it happens.
Yeah. You know, I've had my own experience with anxiety back in my 20s. I've told my listeners this story in the past, but in my late 20s, when I was running a family business and had a lot of stress and a lot of pressure, and I had no idea what was causing it. I was, you know, I seemed like I had to whirl by the, you know, by the tail all day long. And then at night, I'd wake up in the middle of the night feeling like everything was caving in on me. Was this just a baseball thing for you, or were you having other signs of anxiety, if you will?
You know, before the throwing thing happened, I didn't even know what the word anxiety meant. Now, after it happened, and once I started, you know, it happened in 2000, the playoffs. And once I moved into 2001, now anxiety became, you know, the thought of throwing a baseball would give me anxiety. Mm-hmm. There was times I would have nightmares and wake up in the middle of the night drenched in sweat, and I'd have a dream, a nightmare that I couldn't throw a strike. I'd wake up, my heart beating 100 miles an hour. I'm soaked in sweat. You know, the hard part about it then is that, you know, you try to fall back to sleep, and you go right back in this nightmare, right? So then I had to learn how to distract myself. So now it's 3 in the morning, I'd have a dream like this. I'd have to get up and not go back to sleep. I'd go watch TV, read a book, anything to not go back to that dream. Now, the thing about it is that our brains, your subconscious and your conscious can't tell the difference between a dream or reality. So now this anxiety would go with me into the next day, and my chances of being successful that day and throwing a strike and competing were next to nothing.
Man, that's amazing. Now, we know how the dugout can be. The guys can be brutal, and I coached football for 11 years, so I know a little bit about how the locker room can be as well and so on. But when this was going on for you, how were the guys? Were they trying to deal with it lightheartedly, trying to like getting you to shake it off like it was nothing, or was there real concern? How was it for you and with your teammates? You're like 20, 21, 22 years old when this is going on. How were the guys in the dugout?
All of the above. You know, I think, you know, everybody was trying to support me as much as they could, you know, and do whatever they can. At the same time, I don't think they knew what to do because, you know, it's one of those things that, in one way, it's almost taboo. Nobody wants to talk about it. They're almost afraid that if they get too close, it might rub off and get on them. You know, at the same time, they want to support you. It's one of those awkward moments, you know, and it wasn't fun for everybody. You know how this goes in a team. You care about your teammates. You're with these guys more than you're with your families, and they want to help, and at the same time, they don't know how to help, and there's not much they can do.
When you were doing Rick Ankiel with us, former Cardinals pitcher, outfielder, also played with the Royals, the Braves, of course. A lot of we're a Braves affiliate. A lot of Braves fans here remember your time with the Braves, the Nationals, Astros, Mets. When you would do your side work during all of this, when this was going, I want to get to what happens next, but I'm fascinated by all of this. When you were doing your side work, were you able to throw strikes then? I mean, in the bullpen, or was it like everybody beware, I'm going to hit anything?
No, there were days it was good and there were days it wasn't. I mean, obviously, you know, the game setting and the pressure of everybody watching and on TV made it worse. There were sometimes, you know, when I could go on a backfield and just throw a bullpen and throw strikes. And there was times I wasn't. It was just a hard time, dark times, you know. You're trying everything you can to try to get it right, and all you want is just to be yourself again, nothing more, nothing less. You know, I've said this before, it's the hardest thing I've ever went through, and I definitely would not wish it on anybody.
Rick Ankiel became the first player since Babe Ruth to win at least 10 games as a pitcher and hit at least 50 home runs in the field. This wasn't the plan for you, but obviously when you make the decision, all right, I'm gonna go this route, when that happens, just describe that and what it's like to go back to the minors all the way, start all over again. Obviously, you're a great player in high school. Pitchers are always the best athlete. I'm sure you could hit and all of those things, shagging balls and whatnot. But, you know, doing that and playing in the major leagues as an outfielder are two different things. Talk about that process that you go through at that point and where you are emotionally as you're developing to come back as an outfielder.
Yeah, you know, that in 04, and I dealt with, you know, the throwing issue started in 2000 playoffs. So fast forward all the way to 04, and I'm still dealing with this. I made it back in 04 as a pitcher, but I pitched successfully, respectively. that last month down the stretch. And but what it took for me to do that was all day mental training. I felt like I could never be off. I had to be on. I felt like my relationships, my family, my friends were changing. I was just a shell of who I was. And now I get into 2005, the spring training, and I'm still dealing with the same things. And I start to look at it as like, if this is what it's going to take for me to compete and throw strikes, I don't know if this is going to be worth it, whether it's 3 years, 5 years, 8 years, whatever was going to become of my pitching career. And that's when I realized I had to give it up. So I give up pitching. I make the switch. You know, it's funny because immediately when I gave up pitching and I leave the stadium right after I left Tony La Russa's office, I'm driving home, I immediately felt like I could take a deep breath. I felt like this giant weight had been lifted off of my chest and off of my shoulders, and I knew at that moment I had made the right decision. Now I switched over to the outfield. It's funny because it all happened in one day. I retired from pitching that same day. By the end of the day, I'm going to come back and try to make it as an outfielder. You know, that next morning when I was driving to the park and I'm going to be an outfielder that day, it was amazing because now emotionally I'm excited to go. I'm laughing at myself. I'm trying to think about the conversations I'm going to have with my teammates and the media about, yeah, yesterday I just retired from pitching, and today I'm going to give the outfield a shot. It was neat to be able to feel that excitement about coming to the park again, where the previous 4 years, you know, there was days I didn't want to go to the park because it was such a grind, and it just felt like it never stopped. So I welcome the challenge. I'm thankful the Cardinals gave me the opportunity, and you know, obviously making it all the way back. I'm very proud of it. It's hard enough to make the big leagues once, and now I'm the guy who gets to say I made it twice at two different positions.
Rick Ankiel, our guest. The book is called The Phenomenon, The Yips and the Pitch That Changed My Life. And, of course, he goes on to a 13-year career. Now, I remember you making some great throws from the outfield. I mean, I remember some bullets and some assists and some, you know, obviously you had the cannon of an arm and you were in right field for a lot of time, center field as well. But it never – was it just totally different? It was like you could be so accurate from the outfield and it you could throw a strike from center field better than you could from the mound, it seemed like.
Yeah, that's what's so crazy about it. I was more accurate from 300 feet than I was from 60. I mean, it's the cruel part about it, to be honest with you. And, you know, for whatever reason, once I got out past 100 feet, I could trust my arm again, and I knew exactly where it was going. You know, the mound 60 feet, 6 inches. And for whatever reason, in that short distance, my brain and body would just not allow me to do exactly what I wanted to do and had done my entire life.
I got to ask you too, because was there a faith aspect involved in any of this? I mean, was this something where, I mean, because when you're going through all of these things, you know, often it'll put you on your knees. But I don't know if you're a faithful guy or not. Was that part of the recovery as well at all for you?
Yeah, there is some of that in there. I didn't grow up that way.
Yeah.
But after I went through this, I mean, you start searching and you're soul searching and you're looking for anything and everything. And I became curious, wanted to know, started to read the Bible and. You know, I just wanted to know what was out there and if, you know, your faith or Christianity can make you a stronger person or in all these things. I mean, it was an interesting journey and path that I was on. And, you know, it's one of those things I don't regret. I'm just happy the way everything turned out.
Yeah. I know with me, it was medication for 6 months and then literally taught some relaxation techniques and things like that. And I'll be honest with you. I mean, there was a time I couldn't get on a plane. I wouldn't drive over a bridge. I mean, it was just all crashing, you know, on me in that time between, you know, 28, 29, 30 years old. But now it's like so far in the rearview mirror, I never even think of it anymore. Where are you at now at age 37? Is it just everything's just normal for you?
Yeah, I mean, it seems like a different life, and I don't know if it seems like that to you. But, you know, really when I look back at that pitching career, and part of it is, you know, a lot of those memories weren't very pleasant. So I never really went back and revisited those memories as I moved forward. And maybe that was a defense mechanism. But
was it,
the farther I got away from it, the farther it went. And eventually it stayed away. And now, like I said, I'm just proud and, you know, happy about the person that I am, a beautiful wife and two beautiful children. And, you know, really that part of my life seems like a different life. It was so long ago.
Now, when I got to tell you, I've got 4 sons and 5 daughters, but my sons all played baseball, and my oldest son, I beaned him once. I'm just saying, I hit him. You know, I was like 6 or 7 years old, and I beamed him, but I had to come up and in on him because he hit one back through the middle and kind of caught me pretty good, and so I had to kind of go up and in on him. And now I'm asking you, with your kids, if you're going to like go in the backyard and play a little bit with them, are they like, no, Daddy, we don't want you to pitch to us, or can you pitch to your kids all right?
No, I can pitch to them. they're 4 and 6, though, so I'm just putting it in there. But, you know, it's not – I don't have the greatest BP in the world because, I mean, it's no secret I don't like those short distances. I still don't, but I can get it done. But, of course, if they want BP, I'm going to do it. I mean, I'm their dad. I'll do whatever they want to do. I'm in. Let's go do it.
That's being a good sport about it. Was it painful you to write about? I mean, you talk about, you know, you didn't even like to think about that time, the pitching time, and you were so good as a pitcher. I mean, it was coming on. But mm-hmm. was it painful to write about 2000 and what was going on there?
You know, the pitching stuff wasn't hard to write about. What was hard to write about was family stuff. I come from a dysfunctional home, and that was tough. There's a lot of memories and times there that I locked away and thought that I would never talk about that ever again. But it is part of the story, and there are other people who grow up in similar situations, and I just thought it was important, if I was going to tell the story, to tell the whole story. And that was much harder to talk about than the pitching stuff.
All right, Rick Ankiel has been our guest. Life in baseball at all now? I know you did some stuff with the Nationals, but, I mean, is there an opportunity for you? Would you like to be involved in baseball still?
I'm a sports analyst for Fox Midwest.
Okay.
And I like it. So, yeah, I'm still involved in some capacity. Yeah, I mean, I watch a ton of baseball. I love the game. You know, I don't think about all the bad times. I remember all the good times and all the things that baseball
nice.
Has allowed me to achieve, whether it be opportunity-wise or anything else. I just try to remember the good stuff. So, yeah, I'll always be around the game and a part of it in some capacity.
Well, I'm glad you're on our side. Believe me. I mean, I couldn't believe it. I was 37 when I went out of coaching and into broadcasting. I said, I can't believe they're going to pay me for this. I get to talk about it. I get to hang around the game. I don't care who won or lost. I don't have to take it home with me. And they're going to give me a check. So welcome to our side. And I wish you a long, fruitful career as an analyst.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And it's fun to be a part of the dark side.
All right, man. Appreciate you. And good luck with the book.
Thanks. Appreciate it.
All right. Thank you. Rick Ankiel. There you go. The phenomenon. You guys remember Rick Ankiel, don't you? The phenomenon. Pressure, the yips, and the pitch that changed my life. Can't wait to read this book. Watch this thing kind of unfold as it was happening. And when he was 0-for-3 with a couple of strikeouts and a pop-out to the shortstop. In his first game back up, they bring him back up as a – and he had hit like 32 home runs in half a minor league season. So they bring him up In his fourth at-bat, the Cardinals are up 2-0. He hits a 3-run home run in his first game back in the majors as an outfielder after, you know, 3 years toiling to get back. Good stuff. All right, let's get a break. Told you it's a packed show. We'll come back with more after this on 730-1039, The Ump.
Now back to the big dog. This show is rough.
Pretty sure that's not Waylon Jennings. Apparently, it's Ice Cube's birthday, too. I'm just going to go out on a limb here and say this is not Waylon Jennings, okay? But Ice Cube turned 48 today as well. So we figured we might as well give him a little something there. That's no Vicks Vapor Rub or something like that. What is that called? What's that thing called there?
No Vaseline.
No Vaseline. There you go. No Vaseline. Oh, God, what does it even mean?
It was a diss track, so it means what you think it means.
Oh, my gosh. All right, So Ice Cube. I love him on SVU, on Law & Order SVU. He's great in that. That's not him.
It's the wrong guy.
Wrong. It's the wrong ice.
Got the wrong eye.
Who was that?
That's Ice-T.
Ice-T. Oh, Ice-T. Okay.
Yeah, Ice Cube goes in Ice-T, I think. I think that's what it was.
Ice Cube. Oh, he was in, was he with Cedric the Entertainer in the barbershop?
Ooh. Yeah, there you go.
I loved him in barbershop. Yeah, and I love him on those commercials, too. That's a Geico commercial. That he does. That, No, that's iced tea. Iced tea on a iced tea at the lemonade stand. That's a funny commercial, by the way. Have you seen that commercial with the lemonade?
Yeah.
They got iced tea. It's iced tea. It's lemonade. That's good.
Yeah.
Now, which one has got the big, fat, goofy wife that's like a big, big woman? Coco Big Butt or whatever her name is.
That's iced tea's wife.
That's iced tea's wife.
They had a show, Ice-T and Coco, I think. I never watched it.
Ice-T and Coco. Yeah, right. Ice Cube. So Cube... Wasn't Cube NWA? Wasn't he like a wrestler at one point in time?
Yeah, he was. He was in the NWA.
He was in the NWA, right? Now, who else was in NWA? Was Tupac Shakur in that thing or no?
No, Tupac was not in that. Tupac was produced by a member of NWA. Dr. Dre was part of the NWA.
Oh, Dre was in the Beats guy.
Yeah.
So Dr. Dre.
Eazy-E.
Eazy-E, I thought she played the drums behind Prince. Eazy-E, no, who was that? I'm so tragically hip, man. I'm so dialed in on this stuff. They did a movie. Wasn't Cube? Isn't he the Straight Outta Compton guy?
Yes.
And his son, I think, played in that movie. I think his son played him in the movie.
Flawlessly.
Yeah. They call him Chip Dice. That he's the son, Chip Dice. We'll be back. Tom Abraham Show. Josh Ward is next.